Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. My name is Clara Cook, and I'm your host for today. And joining me again is Andrew Brooker. Hello, Andrew. It feels like it was just yesterday that we spoke.
I know, it's been so long.
How are you doing today?
I am good, thank you. I am good. How about you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to finishing up with this second half of this mythology storyline, because we left Mulder on top of a train and
just hanging around
surfing the train at high speed, and also Scully alone in her apartment with Mr. X. So today we're here to talk about episode 10 of series 3, which is called 731. This was directed by Rob Bowman and written by Frank Spotnitz. It's the second half of the mythology story that started with the episode Nisai. 731 aired on the 1st of December 1995 and has an IMDb rating of 8.9 out of 10. So it's slightly higher than Nisai. Andrew, is this kind of fair, do you think, or would you rate it a bit higher?
Yeah, I think it's this episode, I think, does lose its way a little bit. It's in no way is it a bad episode. I still really, really like this episode. It's weird that it's got a slightly higher score than the last one on IMDb. But I still 8.9, 9 out of 10, I'm happy with that.
I probably would rate it a little bit lower than Nisai, but I think that's, yeah, like you said, partly because it sort of loses its way a little bit, introduces a lots and lots of different themes and kind of overwhelms the storyline a bit. So I probably would give it a little bit lower, maybe about 8 out of 10.
See, I'm quite happy to go. I gave Nisai 9 out of 10. 8.9 out of 10 is less than 9. I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that? Stick with that. That little 1%.
It's 0.1 less. It's 0.1 worse than Nisai is.
So, a basic summary of the episode is Mulder is searching for an alien-human hybrid being experimented on board a train, and Scully continues to investigate her abduction and how the two are connected. How did you feel about this episode? Did you feel it was a satisfying end to the two-parter?
I did. I think it opens up, and this is what the X-Files is always good at, it opens up more questions than it really gives you answers to, which I'm more than okay with. We spoke previously about it opening up the cancer storyline for Scully. I think it's a good end to the two-parter. I think it's a perfect mid-season couple of episodes, and I think it's a great mythology double bill.
Yeah, there's a lot more action in this part, so than the first part. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe because there was a fair amount of action in the first part as well, but there's a lot more action in this one. Although there are some really tense scenes where Mulder's sort of stuck in a train compartment with an assassin, and that, I think those are quite good scenes. They're quite well scripted and quite well acted, but we'll get to that. So, like, let's take a look at the episode in a bit more depth. So the teaser starts out in West Virginia at a disease research facility where a bunch of heavily armed soldiers turn up and start terrorizing what appears to be a group of 6 civilians. Well, they do look a little strange because they look a little bit like a mix between an alien and a human. So it's sort of quite possible to imagine that they are alien-human hybrids. They're rounded up and taken into the woods and shot in front of a mass grave. And this is all witnessed by a man who's looks like he has leprosy or has some sort of terrible illness, he's hiding from the soldiers in a compartment in the floor of one of the barracks, and then sort of witnesses the mass shooting from behind a tree in the woods. This is a really horrible scene, and it's very dramatic way to start the episode. And mass shootings in front of graves dug out in the woods is something that we've seen in history.
Yeah, this is a, when you look at where we are, you look at the and this is clearly, it's done on purpose, but you look around, there's huts, there's big buildings around. This is the Nazi imagery of this. To say it's brilliant sounds really wrong, but it's brilliant imagery. It's horrible. It's really horrible.
And there's a moment where one of the soldiers kind of casually looks into the pit, all the dead bodies, and then walks back towards the camera, and he's just very casual and nonchalant about it. And the fact that he's walking towards the camera is also something that I think that this isn't a sort of a subtle scene. Nothing's like implied. It's all shown there for you to see. So it's a very strong statement to make at the beginning of the episode, like basically the teaser, and it's not shying away from using the legacy of a lot of the history of World War II, which is where we obviously would normally expect to see this kind of event. The opening tagline, instead of "the truth is out there," is "apology is policy," which sounds a bit like a tongue twister. Apology is policy. what do you think that means?
I think it's probably, and again we mentioned it in the previous episode, I think it's quite likely to do with the Japanese unit 731 that this kind of episode is based around. Because so what we're talking 95-96 would have been about the time that the Japanese government would have been apologizing for the news of their, you know, one of their retroactive "oh shit, we've been caught" kind of apologies that they would have issued for this particular horrific portion of their history. I do think a lot of it's to do with that.
I mean, apology is policy, and Scully goes on to talk about this later, but an apology that is a policy doesn't sound like a very sincere apology, does it, really? It sounds like...
No, it's not. And I think that might be the point.
Yeah. And the fact that it comes straight after the teaser, where you've just seen a whole bunch of people gunned down in the woods, is definitely not an accident. So the first scene after the credits picks up where Nisai left off, and Scully's yelling into the phone at Mulder, who has jumped on top of the train and has subsequently lost his mobile phone. So, typical Mulder style, he's gone out on his own.
I said, managed to keep his gun.
Yeah.
Lost his phone.
Lost his phone this time. Scully confronts Mr. X, and he basically tells her nothing, really. I mean, they talk for a bit, and it's quite a good scene, actually. It's quite dramatic, but he doesn't really say anything that helps her, except to look at the implant in her neck, to go back and actually re-look at that implant and to analyse it. And I was wondering, what did you think of this scene, of the two of them in the apartment sort of barking at each other?
I didn't think that much of it. I don't think it added that much to it, to the episode. It's not something that sticks out as a great part of this episode to me, I have to admit.
Do you think Mr. X actually brings anything really to the episode himself?
Not at this point, no. I think he does. We'll get to it in a bit, but when we see him towards the end of the episode, I think he shows some motivation that we possibly didn't know he had, but at this point I don't think there's any need for him to be there.
He's basically just a device to kind of let the audience know what's happening, isn't he, really?
Yeah. Same as the Lone Gunman were the early stages of the last episode. He's there to move the plot.
Then we see Mulder managing to climb inside the train. He seems to stay on the train for a long time, because yet again the sun seems to go down. So, I mean, unless the sun goes down, like, within seconds, I think he's probably riding the top of that train for a while, which seems hazardous to me.
You've got to try it, and you've got to see how long you can stay up there. You've got to pretend you're surfing. You've got to try and be Wolverine for a bit. You've got to have a laugh while you're up there. I don't know why he was up there that long.
He's, like, never ridden a train before. He's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take it all the way. So he manages to get inside the train, and then he finds a door to a quarantined carriage, which he can't access. And it's the door to the train carriage that we've been seeing throughout the last episode, and you know that which we assume that the alien human hybrid is in. And then he meets my favorite character in the whole episode, who is the most professional and helpful train conductor ever portrayed on television. This train conductor, it's such a bit part, but the guy does a really good job of acting it. I'm just going to say his name to give him some little glory. His name's Michael Patonin, the actor. I don't know what else he's done. I've never seen him in anything else, but he does an absolute A-star job of being this train conductor. And he is just like an amazing train conductor. Basically, Mulder sort of deputizes him, like a sheriff in a Western would deputize like a civilian. Mulder basically deputizes the train conductor, and the training conductor ends up helping him, and actually really ends up saving his life later on. So, Andrew, did you notice this character, or was it just me?
No, I just thought he was a bit gormless. He's been in the X-Files before, though. He was a doctor in Sleepless, the one with Tony Todd, and I think he was in Deep Throat as well. But not in any kind of big part. But no, as a character, I thought the character was great. It was just this gormless dude walking up and down the train, I don't know, hassling people. I thought he'd done all right, but yeah, every time I've watched it, well, to be fair, or to be honest, every time I watch it, I briefly think it's a very, very young-looking Brad Dourif, and then realise that even when he was very, very young, Brad Dourif looks like he does now, so it can't be him. But yeah, I thought he was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I was inspired by this character. You know, he's just a random civilian. Oh, he's a random, you know, person on the train, and I guess I started building a backstory for him in my mind. You know, he comes to work, he's got a really boring job, like he's got this long train journey as a conductor from Ohio to Vancouver, and then all of a sudden, one day, the most exciting thing of all time happens. He meets Mulder, you know, handsome FBI agent who enlists him, helps him. I went all out with it, you know, I gave him a name and a backstory. But anyway,
he's the first conductor in a TV show to ever have his own fan fiction, I think.
If you're listening to this from the X-Cast, please let us know that I'm not the only one who was inspired by this character. this bit part.
Please let me know I'm not the only crazy one.
So together, Mulder and the train conductor go to try and find the Japanese doctor who boarded the train in Ohio, but he's gone from his compartment. And Mulder basically does this really stupid thing by basically giving the train conductor his empty gun and telling him, if you see the Japanese scientist, threaten him with this empty gun, which I just think is a really bad idea, but never mind.
Yeah, I like, don't pull the trigger, otherwise you'll give the game away. Wow, really?
Meanwhile, Scully and Agent Pendrell are running tests on the chip that was taken from her neck, and they discover that it could possibly be used to record and mimic memories in the brain. Or, I was a bit confused at this point, it could fake memories, I think, or obscure memories. Or Scully says it could record people's thoughts. I was totally confused. I mean, like, what does the chip do? I mean,
yeah, at this point we're into some really, really hokey science that to try and explain would... what is it? It's to replicate the brain's memory so someone else can know what you're thinking? I don't know. It's fringe science at its best, or worst, I think.
I mean, at this point, in 1995, I'm not an expert on computers, so I don't know, but at this point in 1995, were tiny microchips being made? I mean, is this something like the foremost of technological, like, advancement? Or was this already there?
There were microchips that small, definitely, but ones that can mimic the thoughts of the brain? I don't think so. But at least I'd like to hope not.
It is a little bit confusing. It's also not clear, like, how that would be useful to scientists, or how that would be useful to the wider conspiracy, tracking the brain.
I mean, I suppose you've got two options. You either, at some point, take this person back and remove the chip and it's all stored on there, or you're getting this constant feed from everyone you've put a chip into going, I'm hungry. I need a drink. I'm tired. This does not sound like interesting data to be accumulating.
Yeah, or in the case of Scully, like, oh my God, I'm so annoyed with Mulder right now.
Yeah. Really? Again?
Again?
Yeah.
So... Pendrell traced the chip's origin to the delivery of a similar technology to a Japanese doctor at the research facility in West Virginia that we actually saw in the teaser. And was shown at the end of this scene, which is my delightful scene, that Pendrell has a little crush on Scully.
Oh, it's so bad.
I mean, who doesn't, you know? I have a crush on her, you know? I mean, but poor Pendrell, because he's just he's so awkward.
It does hurt as well, actually. He is painfully awkward.
Meanwhile, the Japanese scientist aboard the train, I think he's coming back from the dining car. I don't know what he's doing walking around the train, but he's walking through the train and he's coming back to his compartment, or it looks like he's about to go visit the toilet. And he gets followed by the red-haired man who basically assassinates him yet again in another toilet, in a locked train toilet compartment.
If you're good at something,
yeah. As, you know, why deviate from the formula that works.
Exactly.
And he appears to assassinate him with what looks like cheese wire or piano wire.
Yeah, on a couple of climbing carabiners.
This is kind of an interesting way to assassinate people. I guess it's silent and deadly, but it also seems kind of inefficient. But
yeah, it's very Cold War spy movie, like something a KGB agent would do.
Mulder later discovers the dead scientist and then goes to tell the train conductor, and the train conductor's like, no!
See, Gormless!
Another one of my favourite bits. No, he's just horrified at the idea that someone's lost their life on his train.
In his toilet.
Scully goes to the research centre in West Virginia. I'm not even sure about the locations of all of this, but they do seem to sort of travel from one end of the US or one state to another quite quickly, but it's a TV show, so let's not go into that.
It's that secret railway, though.
It's a secret railway. It's speeding them along. So she goes to this research centre and she discovers people with leprosy and other disfiguring diseases hiding in a trapdoor in the floor. And the gentleman, who I think is called Escalante in the credits, he's the guy who witnessed the assassination, or the mass killing of all the people in the beginning. He's there and he starts talking to her and telling her that basically they were hiding because they thought that she was a member of one of the death squads coming to kill them. It's pretty clear that this medical facility, all the staff have left, that the patients are living in bad conditions and they're not being treated. And it's pretty squalid, to be honest. So he takes Scully to see the mass grave in the woods, and this is where things really get batshit crazy. I mean, like, proper crazy. So it's the idea that the government could hide a mass grave of hundreds of dead human stroke, alien stroke test subjects in West Virginia just seems insane to me. I don't know. What did you think about that?
Yeah, see, this is what I mean when I say the episode kind of loses its way a bit. I'm happy to suspend my disbelief for a lot of the X-Files, and then sometimes something happens where you just go, nah, that's bullshit. And that's pretty much my line, is hidden leper colony with mass graves all around it. Bit much.
Yeah, and the fact that Scully actually says leprosy is curable, so like, dudes, like, what are you doing here, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, and he sort of says, well, we caught leprosy before the cure came about. You know, before the cure was discovered, and that's why we're here. And I was thinking, but still, wouldn't people be treating you with something in some way?
But this, I think, this is the whole Unit 731 thing, though, isn't it? Now they've got this disease, time to start experimenting on people.
Yeah, and he sort of says that the individuals with leprosy were kept separate from the individuals who were being experimented on with, I assume, what would be alien DNA or whatever, who were the ones that ended up in the mass grave. So they're slightly different because they look different. And he complies that they were kind of the worst ones that were treated. They were treated worse, basically, in the worst experiments. So Scully gets accosted by armed soldiers, right conveniently at the point where she's about to discover more evidence. So she actually is standing on the edge of a mass grave and peering into a mass grave and seeing these dead bodies that don't look very human. And this is another point where I struggle, because I think, well, once you've seen this... And this is kind of what Mulder said in the side to her in a conversation, like, you were in the warehouse at the end of The Blessing Way... Obviously, he doesn't know the episode title, but you know, you were in the warehouse and you saw these sort of alien-like creatures run past you. And she's like, it's just not enough. I need more evidence. And sometimes I feel like slapping her, because this is proper evidence. You're staring into a mass grave full of people that look like aliens.
See, this is one of those times where you go, because you are, well, I do anyway. I always like to side with Scully. You go, yeah, I see why. I see, you know, you're not convinced. But then some things do happen. You're like, you saw that. Right in front of you. You can't say you didn't see it anymore, you know. And I'm the biggest one. I still do that, oh come on, when she's looking the wrong way when something happens, or you know, like in the film when she's magically unconscious when the enormous spaceship appears. You do it and you get so frustrated by it, like, come on, you could, it's right there. But when you've actually seen it, come on, woman.
So there's a prime example. But as she's looking at the evidence, conveniently some armed soldiers show up, and a helicopter, and basically the forces come in. And that's another strange thing. I wonder why the soldiers came in, shot everybody, left them in an open mass grave for anyone to find, left, and then suddenly when it turns out that someone might be looking at the grave, they all sweep in again. They're not very good at getting rid of their evidence. And actually this is something throughout the entire X-Files that I've always thought.
Considering this is a secret base or a secret facility, they make an awful lot of noise. and you know an awful lot of light pollution getting in and out of that place. Do it during the day, when you don't need big searchlights everywhere so you can see your way around.
Why wouldn't you go in and take care of everybody there to eradicate the whole... I mean, I'm not in favour of killing loads of people, but, you know, if you're an evil mastermind, why wouldn't you go in and just execute everybody rather than just taking a bunch of people out? And...
But this is it. If you're going to do something, do it right.
Yeah. Get rid of all the evidence.
Yeah.
So the last thing we know is that she's basically being held at gunpoint. Mulder is still on the train and somehow is able to open the door to the quarantine compartment. So I think at this point, the door to the quarantine compartment has suddenly been opened, or it's slightly open. And inside, and he kind of goes through the entire compartment with his flashlight, and the lights are off. And then he kind of gets to a section at the back of the train carriage, which is locked and secured. And inside, he sees an alien-human hybrid locked in the compartment. So I wanted to stop at this point and ask you what you thought about the cinematography of the episode, because there's lots of different camera shots in this scene, and there's a really good one where the alien is actually reflected in the iris of Mulder's eye.
See, the iris, the image in there is was used on the VHS cover for the VHS double bill we were talking about in the last episode. I think it's really good. It's a nice little shot, because it's almost... it's done in such a way that as it's revealed in that close-up, you're kind of pulling the same face that he will be pulling as he realizes what it is he's looking at. The cinematography overall, and it's actually especially in that train car, because obviously there's a lot of shiny surfaces, a lot of very clean surfaces, and to make it look good, to make it be look clean and sterile, still have a good shot, and more importantly not have reflections of cameras on every surface that you look at, is actually really, really good. It's very well done.
Yeah, I never actually think about that when I'm watching television or a film, but actually you're right. Keeping the cameraman out of the shot when he might be reflected in something must be actually a real feat of logistical engineering, because...
I think it would drive me nuts trying to do that. I don't know how people do it. But at the same time, then you laugh at people and you go, I saw the camera in the mirror.
That would really ruin the sort of atmosphere of the episode, wouldn't it? Because it basically breaks the fantasy element of it, and you suddenly realise you're watching television.
Yeah, exactly. And that's you know, same when you see it in a film. You've completely broken my immersion. Not that this is a... You know, we've already said that several things have pulled us out of these episodes so far. But yeah, if you are invested in this, I don't know, surgical environment that they're sat in. So if you see a reflection from a stage light or something, you can, oh, okay. Back to TV. Fair enough.
It's also good as well, the lack of light, because it sort of fits in very much with the X-Files, with Mulder going in with a flashlight and, you know, delving into a sort of a dark kind of, like you said, sort of a clinical, surgical area. This is something that we see repeatedly again and again in the series. He breaks into one lab or another, walking in the dark, and... I don't know, it's very effective. It's sort of, and the fact that it's on a train as well, as the fact that they managed to do it on a train. Although I presume they probably filmed these carriage scenes stationary, not on an actual train.
I would assume so. Yeah. But it does a good job of not necessarily making you forget that you're on a train, but it doesn't feel like a train while you're watching these scenes. Okay, the scene is a bit cramped, but it's not claustrophobic. Because it's very clean and spread out, it looks very good. It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't feel like you're on a rocking carriage. Because again, I think it would detract you from the scene if suddenly things started rocking around.
Yeah, sort of rattling around with the motion or something would be kind of
yeah.
I mean, it's obviously like a purpose-built lab for experimenting on people on the go or in a different location. So it's a movable lab, basically, movable operating. Or autopsy room, operating theatre, which just makes the whole thing even more sinister. The idea that, you know, you could be taken anywhere onto some sort of movable lab and experimented on, which makes the whole idea of Scully being abducted and being on a train carriage like this even more creepy. So Mulder is just looking at this alien human hybrid patient experiment subject thing, and is really shocked by it, and the poor creature looks a little bit frightened and nervous, and I don't know, I think I don't know if you're supposed to feel anything for it, but you're definitely supposed to feel a sense of awe, but also I sort of felt a little bit of empathy for it because it does look frightened.
You're right, I think I did as well. I kind of went, oh that's, yes, not to sound like disparaging, but oh that's really sad.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
And it's interesting because it's turning on its head the idea, it's like when they found the boxcar of sort of murdered aliens, it's this idea that human beings are actually the villains in this story. It's not the aliens. You know, the human beings are the ones who are the true monsters, and that the aliens are kind of almost like a sort of unwilling participant in all of this.
There have definitely been points, you know, through the entire show where it's been not even particularly subtle about the fact that really we're the bad guys. We're the ones causing all the damage, we're the ones causing all the trouble. Aliens or not, we're the ones that we should be scared of.
Yeah, and although there's lots of supernatural elements and themes to the X-Files, almost always, like however many times out of 10, 9 times out of 10, it's almost always the human beings who are the most scary things. And in this particular story arc, it actually is less supernatural and more about corruption, and the corruption of scientists and the corruption of the government and corruption of, I don't know, trains.
Of conductors.
Corruption of conductors. So Baldur is looking at the alien, and then as he's doing that, he's attacked by the red-haired assassin who tries to strangle him with his special assassin wire. And Mulder is saved by the plucky train conductor, who basically holds up the unloaded gun and tells him to stop strangling Mulder. And then when the assassin steps towards him, the train conductor freaks out and runs out of the compartment and locks the door, or slams the door behind him.
Yeah.
Locking the assassin and Mulder in the same train carriage with the alien-human hybrid, which is a dramatic twist.
Yeah, that's, I think, this is where it gets to what is easily my favourite part of the episode. Like, these two together in this carriage, I think, is amazing. You know, whether or not you believe the anything that comes out of the assassin's mouth, I think the conversations between the two in this room, I think, are great. You know, it's because the conductor unwittingly locked the pair into the room, gormless as he is.
He does have a particularly gormless look on his face when he looks through the window, doesn't he? He's like,
yeah,
like, oh my god. so yeah, no, it builds up the tension between the two characters, which actually really does pay off, like with this, because you know that the red-haired assassin isn't going to necessarily sit back and relax now. He's keeping his eye out. So the entire time, Mulder has to have his gun trained on the assassin while he tries to interrogate him. And so the tension does build slowly between the two of them over the course of the episode. So that's, I think, really effectively done. Mulder pulls his gun on the assassin, and the red-haired man claims to work for the NSA and says he's triggered a bomb on the train when he accessed the compartment using the dead Japanese scientist key code. I don't think it's ever clear who actually planted the bomb, whether it was the Japanese scientist trying to ensure that nobody got the test subject, or whether it's the American government trying to ensure that the Japanese doctor never managed to take the alien human hybrid back to Japan, or
I don't, the logic here is beyond me, because if you arm the bomb, how do you disarm the bomb? Because if no one knows how to do it, I genuinely don't understand. There is this point at this episode where you go, so you've actually made it so that no matter what, this thing was going to blow up. There was no two ways about that. It was going to explode. And there was absolutely no back out plan for that at all. Which is the worst bit of organising I think I've ever heard of.
I actually don't think the bomb was needed in the storyline. I think it would have been dramatic and like exciting enough without the bomb, just with the two of them trapped in a compartment together, because the red-haired man is frightening enough as he is, and we have an alien-human hybrid, you know, stuck in there too, so we don't really need the bomb. But I suppose the bomb is there to just fuel the action along. I think it's kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, I think we kind of need the bomb at the end of the episode with Mulder and Mr. X. I think the bomb is required. I just think it could have been introduced differently. But I suppose with the bomb there, it creates tension when they're trying to get out.
Yeah, maybe it just makes everything a little bit more heightened. So But despite the fact that he's been told there's a bomb, Mulder doesn't believe the assassin. And we then jump back to Scully being led into one of the barracks by a soldier to meet a man who's titled in the credits as the Elder. And the Elder...
He's the first Elder?
He's called
in the mythology?
I always thought he should have a better name than that, because, you know, there's like this well-manicured man and all that kind of thing. And I always thought he should have something like, I don't know, he's got a very he's got a very square head, hasn't he? Like the square-headed man or something. Just the first Elder seemed a little bit too mundane. I'm pretty sure that the other Elders don't call him that. I'm sure they have some sort of nickname for him. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, it sounds very Templar-ish. I quite like it, actually.
That's true. Yeah, a little bit like the Freemasons. No, the Stonemasons. Yeah. What are they called?
Yeah, the Freemasons.
I always call them the Stonemasons. So she's led into the barracks to speak to him. And he's a key figure in the entire conspiracy of, like, the entire X-Files. And we've seen him in previous episodes, especially talking to the cigarette-smoking man. He seems to give the cigarette-smoking man orders and sort of has an antagonistic relationship with the cigarette-smoking man. Mulder is still debating with the red-haired assassin. Oh, before I go on to that, there's this very sort of creepy moment where I noticed that he doesn't call Scully Agent Scully, he calls her Miss Scully, which is a little bit condescending. And then also sort of says, I know everything about you, Dana, which is just a sign to me, big red flag up there, is a sign to me that he is involved in her abduction, if he knows everything about her.
Yeah.
Okay. So this doesn't seem, I mean, this seems to make her a little bit uneasy, but it doesn't seem to prevent her from trusting him. Which
I think it's one of those, you've got to trust someone, and when they start telling you that, you know, your partner's life is in danger, maybe you believe them a little bit, just in case.
Yeah, or she doesn't trust him, but she's trying to put him at ease.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe she's trying to make it out that she does trust him so that she can save Mulder.
Yeah, that would work as well.
So, meanwhile, Mulder is still debating with the red-haired assassin when his phone rings, the actual assassin's phone rings, which I think is quite a comical moment, and the assassin answers the phone. And it turns out to be Scully. He's like, hey. He's like, it's for you. And Mulder's like, what? And she says that she's with the Elder, and she says that she believes that the story of the Japanese rogue scientists, basically. So it's the story that these Japanese scientists were taken in by America after World War II to help with scientific experimentation. A bit like how Americans took in Nazis to help with the space program.
Yeah.
And they basically went rogue and they started experimenting on humans with terrible diseases and using the secret railroad as a cover to experiment on humans. And she was also experimented on when she was abducted, and she says she remembers a train carriage and she remembers a Japanese scientist, and she says it has nothing to do with aliens, and the aliens are basically a smokescreen. The government's come up with this alien abduction UFO story as a smokescreen to mislead the public. And that seems about as crazy as almost anything else. At this point, the alien abduction storyline seems to make more sense than Scully's assertion that it's rogue Japanese scientists. What did you think?
At this point, we're kind of, I'm with you. I think I believe that more than anything else.
Yeah, she seems a little naive, I think.
Yeah, maybe. I think a lot of it does come, like I said before, like she kind of has to go, well, maybe if this gets Mulder safe, it should be worth believing.
Yeah.
I like to think that's the case.
And I think she's been fighting against the idea of aliens for so long that perhaps maybe she can't quite let herself believe.
No.
She doesn't really want to believe, does she? Even Mulder seems confused. Mulder's like, what? So apparently the bomb on the train carriage is on a timer, and apparently it will spread hemorrhagic fever like to the local population surrounding the train tracks and the train lines if it goes off. And I mean, at this point I started losing my way, because there's just too many elements being ejected into the storyline at this point. I'm like, where did like hemorrhagic fever come out of nowhere? And also, how does hemorrhagic fever make somebody look like an alien?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? So they kind of the thing's not an alien, it's got hair magic fever. Yeah, just believe us, it just is. It does. Just don't ask questions. And the bomb's going to explode, and hair magic fever's going to spread everywhere, because that sounds like a jolly good time. But this is what I mean when I say this episode does lose its way a bit. I still really, really like it, but there are too many leaps in insane logic.
And I think the X-Files does do this sometimes. It overcomplicates itself when it could just keep things a little bit simpler. It's making a conspiracy twist for the sake of having a conspiracy twist. And at this point in this show, in this particular episode, I'm not sure we needed a twist, because we were still focused on the idea of, oh my God, they managed to create an alien-human hybrid. But no, we don't need to be in awe of that anymore, because we're moving on to the next thing, which is a bomb with an infectious disease that's about to, you know, infect the local population. So I think there's enough going on at, like, the idea of an actual successful alien-human hybrid that we don't need all this other sort of plot twist, but I think they wanted to make it as exciting as possible.
There's also the thing of putting the seed of doubt in the back of Mulder's mind, I think, you know, and ours, because, you know, we don't know. But I quite like the idea of Mulder not, even though he's seen it, maybe he hasn't really seen it. Maybe he really did see something with hemorrhagic fever.
He's not a doctor, so he wouldn't know necessarily, would he?
No.
And I think part of the problem is, for me, is that I'm watching this episode years and years after watching all the mythology episodes of the entire X-Files. So, remember, this is season 3. So this is actually quite a bold and interesting storyline for season 3. But the problem is, I also know that we have years ahead of us of more strange mythology twists and kind of convoluted mythology storyline that's coming up, which I've also watched. So the problem when scriptwriters are writing shows is they never know what's going to come up in the future. They never know how long the series is going to go on for. So they're writing what they can write at the time without the foreknowledge of, like you said, when somebody knows their series is going to be renewed for another couple of seasons, then the writers can write something quite different.
Yeah, they can write stuff very different, but also at the same time, maybe not so much back then, but now, you know, 2 episodes into The Walking Dead, and it's announced that The Walking Dead is going to continue for 2 more seasons, you're like, well, then I know not everybody that you put in peril is not going to make it out, because you need somebody in your TV show in 2 years' time, you know. So I actually care much less for the people in my TV show once we get to that point. But yeah, and I do think the X-Files, you know, like we said in the last episode, especially for like us, it does suffer some from us knowing that there are 8 more seasons from here, and so much more horrible shit happens to Mulder and Scully and everybody else. And we're like, well, this is nothing, and we know it's all going to be fine.
So you have to kind of try and watch the episodes while blocking your mind to all of that kind of information as well, don't you? And sometimes, if you know the series is going to go on for seasons and seasons and seasons, there is no sense of urgency when wrapping up a storyline or a mythic arc sort of plot. And I mean, The Walking Dead is a prime example of that. They've never really addressed how this plague has happened and how the zombies have happened. And, you know, seasons later, everybody's wondering, like, how is this going to end? And is anything actually going to be resolved? And but since they know they've got years.
But it's a lot like when you watch these episodes now, like the previous episode, you go, well, it is a cliffhanger because it's made very well and it's made you want to watch the next episode, but it's not as effective now because there's no way on earth you're waiting 7 days to watch that. It's the same way that, for reasons best known to themselves, Netflix make TV and put it all out in one go, but still have cliffhangers at the end of every episode. Like, we're not going to just click watch next episode. Do you know what I mean?
We'll spend 5 hours of our lives indoors watching television.
Spend the entire day just going, just one more episode.
It's very true. I guess the way we watch television has changed, and the X-Files is comes from a different television watching era. We are watching like 90s television in 2018, so it is a different experience. So apparently the bomb on the train carriage is going to spread hemorrhagic fever, as I said, and at this point the alien-human hybrid story is kind of all in doubt now, because, you know, Scully's kind of giving us this other explanation. So they start looking for the bomb over the phone, and Mulder finds the bomb in the ceiling and asks the conductor to reroute the train to an uninhabited area where the driver of the train should be able to disengage the carriage from the rest of the train and basically leave it there, so that hopefully when the carriage does explode, it doesn't hit anybody nearby. Now that Mulder and the red-haired man are left alone, Mulder questions him and finds out that the hybrid patient in the train carriage is immune to biological warfare, and that the Japanese doctor, who was named Zama, had been trying to sneak the experiment out of the US, and the US government were trying to destroy the evidence rather than allow it to fall into Japanese hands. And the red-haired man was sent to kill both the scientist and the alien hybrid. So what did you think of this? Like, this is the idea that the Americans recruited these horribly immoral Japanese scientists to work for them, and then
tried to clean it up.
And then backfired on them, basically.
Yeah, this is one of the more believable bits of it, and I say believable like I've had experience of this. I have not, but what I mean is, you know, it's something that comes up in TV and film a lot. You know, people doing something, whether it be a dodgy military operation or something like this, and then sending even dodgier people to clean up after them so there's no evidence. And that, I like that. I think it's a good story. I think it's a good part of this particular story, and it's believable. If we can believe that the government is doing this, you know, horrendous secret testing on people, and then going in and mass killing everybody involved, I think we can believe that someone from a shady agency, not necessarily the NSA, which is a bit strange to even consider that, but, you know, it is then believable to say that they would try and they'd have one guy who is their guy to clean up after them. Yeah, I liked it, actually. As parts of this story go, that's not the worst bit. I thought it was fun. I liked it.
Yeah, it's sort of like doing a deal with the devil, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know that any deal with the devil that you do is going to backfire on you. So it's like like Senator Matheson said in the last episode, monsters begetting monsters.
Yep.
And in that situation, you're going to basically have to destroy both monsters in order to come up smelling of roses, aren't you? So Mulder doesn't completely buy it. He still thinks the patient is an alien-human hybrid. And I'm kind of with Mulder on this, actually. I think the patient is an alien-human hybrid as well. Scully is desperately trying to free Mulder from the train car, and she tries to call Senator Matheson, and she puts an X on the window of Mulder's apartment, which seems a little redundant, since at this point Mulder only has like 30 minutes left before the bomb goes off. I'm like, what does she think either of these things are going to do? But yeah, she's trying all avenues, and you've got to admire her commitment. And actually, we see routinely in the series, we see her put X's on windows, or specifically X's on Mulder's window.
Yeah.
When she's desperate, that's like her last go-to sort of measure, isn't it? I mean, first of all, she tries to science her way out of things by doing science and tests and everything. But then when she's just really stuck, like, she basically puts her masking tape X in the window.
Yeah, she kind of, when she can't figure something out via the things that she trusts, she then goes to roots that, while she doesn't necessarily believe, goes to roots that Mulder trusts. And yeah, X and Matheson have steered him wrong in the past, you know, a lot in some cases. But yeah, she has to try it. And these guys have come through for Mulder in the past. Maybe they'll come through for her when she needs them to rescue Mulder.
Yeah, she often does this when she's trying to rescue Mulder and she's really desperate, which I really like, because it shows her commitment to, like, being Mulder's partner and a commitment to saving his life, especially in this episode.
Yeah.
So as she's doing that, she sees her reflection in the television, Mulder's television, and she basically has this brilliant idea of watching the autopsy tape again. I mean, this is the tape that Mulder ordered from a conspiracy theorist back in the first episode, Nisai.
Yeah.
And while she's watching it, she slows down an image of the scientist unlocking the door. And the idea is there's a different key code to locking the door as there is, like, to get entering into the carriage as there is to exiting the carriage. And Mulder doesn't have the key code for exiting the carriage, which is why he and the red-haired man are locked in there.
Yeah.
And she's going through it, and it's very cleverly, she sort of zooms in and slows down the tape and watches the scientist press the buttons on the key code and gets the code for Mulder, and he manages to unlock the door. And it's actually kind of quite a good tense little scene where they're going through the numbers. But unfortunately, as Mulder manages to unlock the door, he's knocked out by the red. He turns his back on the red-haired man, and he's knocked out by the red-haired man, who then quite viciously beats him.
Yeah, he gets quite an ass kicking once he's on the deck. That's, you know, obviously you don't see it. It's all implied from just through the little window of the door. But yeah, it's quite a beating that dude takes.
And then the red-haired man steps over Mulder's prone body and goes to leave the train carriage. Interestingly, though, he doesn't actually go to kill the alien-human hybrid, which implies that he wasn't sent to kill the alien-human hybrid. It implies that he was sent to kill Zama, the Japanese scientist, and that the alien-human hybrid is still useful to the conspiracy and will at some point be picked up or rescued, which is what Mulder was asserting, was that if this is an alien-human hybrid, then the conspirators or the government will come take it. If it's just a patient with hemorrhagic fever, then they'll just let the train car blow up.
Yeah.
So this is kind of confirmation that it is an alien-human hybrid at the end of it.
Or it's just that he knows he might not have time to get in and kill it and get out. And
oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Doesn't want to give Mulder the opportunity to regain consciousness and just needs to do one. Not that it ends well for him either way.
Yeah, so the red-haired man is stepping out of the carriage and we hear a shot and he falls down. He's been shot by Mr. X. Interestingly, this actually sort of ties in with the fact that he's just beaten Mulder, because we don't really see him get shot. We just see him fall back, and we don't see Mulder get beaten. We just see the red-haired man basically acting like he's beating Mulder. And similar with the Japanese scientist being killed in the toilet, we don't see the Japanese scientist be killed. We just see him be dragged into the toilet. So a lot of the violence is actually taking place outside of the camera's view. And I'm just wondering, what do you think? Do you think this is effective?
I think it's effective. I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, we're talking mid-90s TV on Fox and later on mid-90s TV on the BBC. This isn't Game of Thrones. It's not HBO. They tended to not have that. And you still don't, to a point. That level of violence is rare in that kind of TV. Famously with the X-Files, Home was very, very nasty. But outside of that one, you haven't had much, certainly not in the way of violence. There's, you know, and even nowadays, you get, on things like NBC, you get Hannibal, but not much else. All the really violent stuff tends to be stuck to channels like HBO, and it's pretty standard, I think. It's still effective, you know. Nothing's lost by not having the violence on screen, I don't think. And to be fair, The X-Files just doesn't need it. You know, The X-Files isn't about the violence. It's about the conspiracy and the intrigue and all that kind of stuff. To be honest, I'm perfectly fine with not having it on screen.
It's a kind of a good way of getting quite mature and adult and violent ideas past the censors, isn't it, really?
It is. It means you can have your TV show on, you know, slightly earlier in the evening. Okay, it's still not, you know, 6 o'clock in the evening, but you know, if you can have it on 8, 9 at night and it still be okay, you get more audience that way, get a bigger following.
I've always thought The X-Files was quite good at that, actually. It's very insidious and creepy in its way without being too massively graphic.
Yeah.
When I was younger and I watched it, and even now, I've never found it not frightening. It's not because of the violence, it was because of, you know, the atmosphere and the way it was written, the way it was shot and everything. So I'm glad that they carried that on into recent series, especially, like, you know, I mean, some of the most recent episodes of season 11, there are actually some horrific deaths, but you don't actually see much violence. It's just kind of the aftermath, but they're still very effective.
Yeah, season 10 had that, didn't it, with the trash man, like, ripping people's heads off and ripping people in half was quite nasty, but you didn't see any of it.
And Mr. Chuckleteeth.
Yeah.
In Familiar, you know, I mean, the children dying, it's horrible, but you're not seeing the children actually die, which would be much more, I think would be much harder to show that on television. And The X-Files has been pretty good when it comes to the death of children. It's horrible, but it's not anything that would, I think, give the censors too much trouble.
Yeah, I think you risk alienating your fan base even now when you do things like that.
Yeah, because it's not The Walking Dead, is it?
No.
People don't watch it they watch it for different things. They don't watch it for the violence, really.
Exactly.
So Mr. X comes on board. He steps over the red-haired man, like, just really nonchalantly. Like, I shot that guy. And he's faced with a limited time before the bomb detonates. So he does go and actually look in the window at the alien-human hybrid. And then he looks at Mulder, and Mulder's obviously completely unconscious because he was basically kicked by and beaten by the red-haired man. And he chooses to save Mulder. Mr. X chooses to save Mulder. And he sort of slings him over his shoulder. And the next shot we see is him walking away from the train carriage with Mulder in like a fireman's hold.
Yeah.
And then the train carriage blows up in spectacular style, which is pretty impressive because the bomb obviously detonates.
Yeah.
And it's a huge explosion, which must have taken quite, I would say, a lot of like pyrotechnics.
Yeah, that would have taken some planning to find a railway somewhere you could do that on.
And they film it from different angles, don't they? They film it from far away, so you actually do see how big it is.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it's a very well-done explosion, actually. And again, for TV, for the X-Files, it was very, very good.
And like a boss, Mr. X doesn't really start running away until the flames get slightly too close.
Yeah.
He's just, like, nonchalantly walking off, you know.
He's trying to do the slow-mo walk away as things explode. doesn't go quite to plan, but he almost gets it.
Yeah, he speeds up a little bit towards the end, doesn't he? Like, oh god, I'm slightly too close to this train carriage. And then almost immediately, we're actually back in the X-Files basement office, and you wonder how it's happened. But it turns out that Mulder has been, there was an anonymous tip to a hospital nearby that where to find Mulder, and Mulder was basically taken, obviously Mr. X probably called the hospital, and Mulder was taken to a local hospital where he recovered. So he's recovering from being beaten, although his face is all bruised and damaged. And he's trying to find information on the destroyed rail car, but he's unable to do so. Basically, he's meeting dead ends every sort of area that he looks and everybody he tries to speak to. Senator Matheson isn't taking his calls. Typical Matheson, you know, dude. He's proving no help whatsoever. And Scully has Zammer's briefcase, which she was presumably given by the people investigating, I guess the local authorities investigated the bombing, but it looks different than the one that Mulder's seen. And when he opens it, he realizes that it's a completely different briefcase with a completely different information in it. So Zammer had apparently written a diary or a note in a notebook. He'd written lots of notes on his research in Japanese, and it's a completely different notebook, and it doesn't have the same information at all. So it looks like all their hard work has been completely covered up and there's no evidence, which we kind of have this at the end of every mythology episode, don't we?
Yeah, this is basic standard X-Files, isn't it? It's 2 hours of, oh, we might get something. No, we don't.
I mean, did you feel frustrated?
Again, I know there's eight seasons coming after this, so no. You know, it's just another fun episode. And by this point as well, you're talking, two and a half seasons in, we're used to this. It's just, it's moving on the story. It's a bit more to the mythology, and now with the next mythology episode, we'll either get some more questions or some more answers, or probably neither. And it will continue. I don't find it frustrating. And I don't remember ever being frustrated at the fact that we're back to essentially the exact same spot we were at the beginning of the previous episode, because everything that's happened has made no difference. But, you know, it kind of has. We've got extra information. We know what it might be. Know what it possibly isn't. No, I'm not frustrated at all.
Also, Mulder and Scully are more energised now as well, aren't they? Because I was surprised by how angry they appear in this scene.
Yeah.
And Scully sort of says the famous words, apology is policy. She's angry that these people were experimented on. She's angry that she's been experimented on. And that all she's going to get is, like, some sort of official
government apology. We're sorry you found out.
Yeah. So they're both angry. And she wants an apology for the lies. And I think it's Mulder wants an apology for the truth.
Yeah.
So they're both angry. And which makes you feel like that they're reignited in terms of going forward. And what started out originally in Nisai with this first scene where Mulder and Scully are kind of like debating over whether or not an alien autopsy video is real, and they both seem kind of jokey about it, has ended up with them both armed with a lot more alarming information and with a determination to actually continue forward in their pursuit of the truth. So it has actually been a useful endeavour. It's proved to be a useful two episodes.
Yeah.
So the real ending of the entire episode shows that the real notebook, Zama's real notebook with his notes in Japanese, is being translated by a Japanese translator in a dark, shadowy room while the cigarette-smoking man stands nearby smoking in a sinister way. I was a little bit concerned about the Japanese translator, because I was like, dude, once you finish translating that, you know the cigarette-smoking man is just going to kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they're like friends or something, but still.
But yeah, there's rarely a side character that turns up in this that doesn't have a horrible end in store at some point, is there?
Well, I mean, where's the conductor? I don't think he's going to have a good ending. He witnessed the whole thing.
I know.
You know? Poor plucky conductor. And I think it's a nice introduction of the cigarette-smoking man at the end. It feels very much like some of the first mythology episodes in season one, where you see the cigarette-smoking man putting something in a vault or a warehouse at the end of an episode that he's quietly collecting and covering up the evidence. And I actually preferred him as a shadowy villain to what he's actually become now. Obviously, years and years later, he's much more of a sort of cartoonish vampire-like character who can't die.
Yeah.
So this is the cigarette-smoking man that I like the most. You know, this guy in the edge of a room, just sort of standing there silently observing. What did you think of his sort of little cameo here?
Yeah, I liked it. Like you say, working from the shadows, more or less silent, you know, just has people do things for him. I like him as that character. And that's the character, I think, when someone mentions the cigarette-smoking man to an X-Files fan, I think that's the character you think of, not, like you say, the dude that miraculously came back from being blown to pieces, you know, somehow. But yeah, I liked him in this. I do like, in the early seasons, the cigarette-smoking man is one of my favourite characters, just because he is that kind of Cold War-ish, shadowy character. I think he's great, and he is what you see from here. Perfect.
So it's been fun looking at the episode 731 in depth today, and you should tune in next time for the next episode of the X-Cast. But before we go, Andrew, where can people find you online?
Online, I'm very easy to find. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Brooker411, where I kind of rant and rave about everything from X-Files episodes to the latest movie that annoyed me. You know, and I run a video games-based podcast every couple of weeks. You can find us at Character Unlock on Twitter.
Is your podcast called Character Unlocked?
It is, yes.
Ah, cool. Excellent. So you can find me, Clara Cook, on Twitter at ClaraJeanMC, and also hanging out at the X-Cast basement group, which is on Facebook. So head over there just to say hello and tell us what you thought of 731. Tell us what you thought of this two-parter and whether or not it ranks as one of your highly ranked mythology episodes, or whether you just felt it was, you know, too many diseases, you know, too confusing. You know, if you liked the train conductor, please do say, because I feel like I'm the only one. But until then, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/thexcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A Y E.